the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast, the best of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardinsWire.com, the USA Today NFL wire site that covers your Arizona Cardinals. And this is episode 600 of these shows. If you've been here since day one, congratulations. Thanks for sticking with us. But episode 600, Seth Cox is with me from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site. And we're here to talk about the Cardinals' surprising win against the San Francisco 49ers 24-23. Fantastic. Just what kind of voodoo magic did the Cardinals have to pull off to do what they did on Sunday? And we'll go into the details. There are some injuries to talk about, but I went back and looked at last season, and I guess it shouldn't surprise me that they did this, because last year when they were embarrassed by the Rams, a game similar in just beatdown fashion as it happened against the Commanders, they went on the road the next week and beat down the Pittsburgh Steelers. Now, granted, it's not the same level of team as San Francisco, but the fact that they rebounded and they completely dominated Pittsburgh and won the next week outright, they got embarrassed by the Commanders, and they found a way to win against the San Francisco 49ers. Just how surprising was that with you? Before we go into the details, just how shocked were you? And I talked about, like, I could see them winning this game, but I thought they were going to fall short.
Yeah, and I think you and I kind of saw what we expected playing out, right, in that game. And that's why it wasn't this whole, like, oh, they can't win it. It was just the reality of their situation, and that they needed, you know, certain things to go their way. And wouldn't it be the Cardinals thing that they come in with a backup kicker who I think it was Feely on Twitter, I could be wrong, said, you know, that block kick was 100% on him. Like, that guy didn't even get real good penetration. He just kind of put the bear paw up and knocked it down. And then, you know, the serendipity of it all, of, you know, DJ Dallas getting a good return and Jake Moody getting, you know, run over, causing him to get injured. And then the Niners don't have a kicker. And it just all, you know, it was one of those things that I thought you and I kind of had the script nailed, and then they were able to flip that. And you know, that's just, I will say this, you and I were talking about it off the air. That's kind of what we've been waiting for, right? Like, their games not to follow the script. I mean, we've talked about it after the Rams game. You kind of just mentioned it, like, they tend to, when they win, like, oh, they're going to win, right? But when they lose, it's always one to two plays. It's like, if they would have just, you know, that play, yeah, or that play. Like, that's how it always goes with this team. And to see that coming, which I think you and I both did, right? We were both like, well, they should be in the game. I had them losing the cover late. You had them covering late. So we were on the same page. And for them to go, nope, not this time. Like, not going to happen this time. You're like, wait, is this the Arizona Cardinals? Because, like, right, the right thing would have been the backup kicker missing that field goal.
Oh, absolutely, 100%. I felt like, oh crap, it's Matt Amendola. It's whatever his name, Rodrigo, whoever.
Oh, yeah, Blankenship, yeah.
I'm like, this is not going to, and we're going to be lamenting old Matt Prater for getting hurt. And he redeemed himself. It's fantastic.
And it just is, and yeah, I can't remember who said it. somebody said it to the effect of like, you know, does this break that curse, that close game, getting over the hump curse? And I want to shout them out because I genuinely cannot remember who tweeted it. Like, but it was, you know, and it's, and obviously we'll see. That's the only response right now, but it's like,
yeah,
hey, did they do it finally? Like, is this team finally figuring out how to flip the script and win those close games? And I know that's a really heavy, heady intro to the show, but that's kind of where it left us, and which is much better than last week, where we're like, is it time to fire everybody?
Yeah, it was good to see. The one thing we want to start with talking about, though, is the first. So we're going to talk about an injury and how they handle this. We're going to talk about the offense. We're going to talk about the defense. But we're going to lead things off with the Cardinals suffering another major injury to the offensive line. This time it is Will Hernandez. Nick Bosa rolled up on his knee, on his leg. Hernandez is done for the season. Which is rough because, as we've noted with Hernandez now for three straight years, not only has he been good, he also brings that nasty that you want from the offensive line. He brings that little extra to him. He's the one that'll get into fights, as we saw last year. He got thrown out going after Frankie Louvu and bumped into an official. That's who he is, and now he's really, really good. Open up holes in the run game. He's been solid in pass protection. He's now done for the year, and that means they're using Kelvin Beachum as their starting right tackle. Until the point at which we don't know if Jonah Williams is going to be back. Maybe November, maybe not. And now at right guard, the Cardinals have a choice right now. They could go with the guy that no one is excited to see, and that'd be Tristan Colon. He's the guy that filled in for four games when Elijah Wilkinson got hurt last year before he got hurt. He rotated in with Wilkinson even late in the season. And Colon was also the guy that filled in for him during the game. And I imagine Colon will be the choice in the starting lineup, but they've got two young guys you could put into that starting lineup, either in John Gaines or in Isaiah Adams, both of whom who have a bit of potential there. If you were the Cardinals, who are trying to balance both now, because they want to win now, they want to protect Kyler Murray, and they want to develop guys for the later, what would be the direction you'd go?
Yeah, it's one of those situations where I don't think Adams is ready as a player yet. So I wouldn't, you know, I would not make him the priority, so to speak. But I do think that when you look at other guys like John Gaines or, as you mentioned, Tristan Colon, we've seen that they're both competent, right? And so I wouldn't mind seeing either of them get an opportunity to play. I mean, I would love to see Gaines. I would. I mean, it would be not that. I mean, Colon has held it down. He's done a good job. Not that he hasn't earned the right, but at the same time, wouldn't it be cool just to see some fresh new blood, like,
right,
then be able to get one of those draft picks? And I know they're all day, you know, I know he's a day three, but like, just get a draft pick that can do something. That would be fantastic. And so
yeah, that it would be good to see. But I mean, I get it, especially Gaines, he missed entire last year, so technically he's now five games in to
his
NFL career.
Yeah. No, and that's the thing, is I get it. I do. It's just one of those things where you look at it and you go, could they do it? You know, and so that's one guy. The other thing is with like Adams that we've seen that he just hasn't, you know, I think he was inactive again this week, wasn't he?
He was injured this week.
Yeah.
But he's been active other games, and Gaines has been the guy that has been that inactive. They've been inactive. But Adams, that they've been kind of on the cusp with him. You know, my take on this is, you know, Cologne's the guy you want to do right now, because I think it's clear that it'd be different if Gaines or Adams are near the consistency that Cologne is, and then give you a higher potential for better, you go with one of them. But I think the gap is still too wide for consistency to put one of them out there when you have a guy who's played a lot of football. Now, granted, before last season, he's mostly been a backup, but he got a lot of playing time last year. He's versatile. It'd be interesting to see if they made a change at positions, because like we know that Evan Brown, he's playing left guard for the first time in his career, and he played a lot of right guard. Like with the year he played guard, he was playing right guard for Detroit. I don't think they would do that, but it's an interesting thing because Cologne obviously played left guard last year. And Brown has played right guard before, and I'm sure that he was only playing left guards because Will Hernandez was firmly entrenched as the guy at right guard. It'd be interesting to see that. But, you know, as much as Tristan Cologne will excite nobody about being in the starting lineup, he brings a competent level of consistency. And the downside is that we have both him and Beecham next to one another, so it clearly the right side of the line is now the weakest side of the line. But until Adams or Gaines can show that they are near Cologne's level of consistency to combine with their ceiling of higher potential, you've got to go with Cologne for now.
Yeah, and I would agree with that.
Coming up next on the Reserve Secret Podcast, Mr. Cardinals talking. Let's go on and talk about the football game. Let's start with the offensive side of the ball, the good and the bad offense. So let's come in next on Reserve Secret. We're back on the Reserve Secret Podcast, Mr. Cardinals talk on the web. Looking at that game, Cardinals win 24-23, and it wasn't pretty by any means. And they were stymied early. I'm not like, have you ever seen the Cardinals go from that to from struggling to being, hey, we can do whatever we want offensively in that short amount of time?
Yeah, it was interesting how the switch flipped all of a sudden. And you know, that to me was indicative of what we've been wanting to see from this group. I think the first thing that you look at, right, is that this was one of those situations where, you know, they needed the, and we've talked about how important the run game is for this offense in general. And it was kind of obvious that San Francisco was like, no, we'll let Kyler, but we're definitely not going to let James Conner beat us.
Right, right.
And, you know, they came out in the second half and they were almost in a defiant response, like, no, we're going to impose our will. Like, we don't really care. We're going to do whatever we want. And you can't stop us. And we just haven't seen that from this group when they're trailing. We've seen it, you know, we've talked about this quite a bit. They're front runners. That's not a bad thing. That's how a lot of teams are, right? That's how a lot of teams play from ahead and they're able to do those things. But this team has rarely, if ever, shown the gumption to impose their will when it hasn't been working previously. And so for them to come in and do just that against, you know, the team that's the proverbial NFC West favorite and still, I think, the NFC favorite overall, that's kind of crazy, is it not?
Yeah, it's insane how that went. And well, like, I think the first thing we could look at is that it yeah, it was they and most NFL teams are built like that. Most NFL teams are built
to run from ahead. Yeah.
Like that's kind of common. Some teams can't even do that. Some teams can't, but the Cardinals definitely are. And but the fact that they were able to turn things around so very quickly in the fourth quarter, and you know, was there a difference? And this is the part I couldn't tell. Was there a difference in how the 49ers were defending it? Or was it just that the heat kicked in, the defense finally tired out? That's the part that I'm really interested, because we really haven't now we know about the 49ers is that they were going into this game, they were pretty average against the run. And maybe it was just a regression to the mean, because they had completely shut down. James Conner had 6 carries for 9 yards in the first half. 6 carries, 9 yards. Obviously, Kyler was a problem. He had the 50-yarder for the touchdown, which, by the way, that was something. the play design, the second he got past the line of scrimmage, and it was funny, everyone's like saying, oh, he knew. He did know. And he put his finger up like he had done so many times at Oklahoma. But did you see how quickly he put that hand back down when he realized he probably shouldn't be doing that?
Yeah, and I mean, that's the maturation of him. And it's funny, because I didn't have a huge problem with it. I mean, it's something that we see teams or guys do all the time. And I think sometimes he tries too hard to conform to what is expected of him, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And he doesn't allow himself to be a kid and have fun. I know he's 20, 25, 26 now. So like, I get people are gonna be like, he's not a kid, but the reality is like he doesn't allow himself to have that joy sometimes, it seems like. And you know,
It's the swagger. Like, you get some quarterbacks doing, Lamar Jackson will get fired up, and he gets fired up. But I guess, you know, I don't know what it is, but I have been waiting his entire career for a run like that. And I get why he has the running style that he does, but he has the speed to outrun almost everyone in the NFL. And if there is even an inkling of traffic around him, he will get out of bounds. He'll get down on the ground. And I get it. He doesn't like being hit, but I thought we would see more runs like that his rookie year. I was like, I've wanted to see breakaway Kyler for years, and we finally got to see it. And it was something else. Like, there are few guys in the NFL who can catch him. I noticed that one. He knew, yes, he knew he was going to score a touchdown. But I also sensed there was an immediate regret for doing that. Oh, this is the NFL. I can't do that. Someone might catch me and hit me. But like, once he got into the open field, and he knows once he gets in the open field, unless somebody gets an angle on him, he outruns everyone. And that was fun to see. You know, fifth straight game with a first drive touchdown, and then the offense kind of got mucky again. You got the two play, then you got a punt, then you kind of bounce back. You got the field goal, then you get the field goal blocked, and then you get the interception, and then they're down 13 points at the half. But they cure. You go to the second half, and then they suddenly are like on track. The fourth quarter, especially. I mean, they went 3 and out. They went 3 and out to start the half. They took advantage of the interception. They didn't do anything offensively, and got the field goal. But then the fourth quarter, that offense was the offense we've seen them play. Their fourth quarter offense was their first quarter offense that we've seen all year. 12 plays, 73 yards. 14 plays, 75 yards. And it was dominated. It was dominated by James Conner's running. And you know, that for me, I'm guessing it was the persistence, because we've seen San Francisco over the years, the Jim Harbaugh San Francisco 49ers would do this against the Cardinals. I remember a game in particular that It was what was a 13 play drive, and Frank Gore ran 12 of them, and it just completely took the life out of the Cardinals, the defense, and they weren't able to recover from it. And that's kind of what happened in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was, and you saw this group kind of, like you said, respond, right? Like they responded to the test, and you know, that final drive is something, and I know the Niners got the ball back, and we can talk about, you know, some of the decisions that they made on that drive that was really interesting to me. But, you know, you look at that drive to get ahead, and you know, the Cardinals score with 11:25 left, excuse me, in the game. Get it to 21-23, ballsy call, obviously, to go for two there, but the analytics backed it up. And they come back, and they have I don't want to say dominant, but borderline dominant drive, right? Like,
yes.
Like, you look at those two drives, that last one in the third quarter and then the one, basically the last one in the fourth quarter, 26 plays. They held the ball for 11 minutes of game time. 26 plays, 11 minutes of game time. And you go back and you look at it, right, and you go, you know, how did that work out? And it was James Conner for two. Then they get the ball back. James Conner. Like, they didn't care. It was one of those, like, it was a statement of, you're not going to stop us. And you rarely see a team, especially down 10 in that instance, come out with a mentality of, you're not going to stop us. You know, and there were some nice passes in there. You had the, you know, Murray's pass to Dortch on early. Then you had the Murray pass to Michael Wilson for a first down.
Wilson likes playing in Northern California.
Right, exactly.
His other good game last year was the two touchdown game in Santa Clara. Like, he shows up for that. Yeah, there's that. Michael Wilson had a really good game. I will say this: the offensive line was good,
and both. We talked about this last week. That Washington game was the anomaly, and it's unfortunate that was the anomaly, because one, Washington's defense hasn't been good, right? But two, it's unfortunate that was the anomaly, because it just came from nowhere,
right?
Like, to have not just a bad game. I mean, bad is a very easy way to put it. That was the worst offensive line play we've probably seen since the beginning of the Jonathan Gannon era. Like, right. that was a miserable, and then to come back against
the shut out Nick Bosa. Like, he had the interception, yes, but Kelvin against Kelvin Beachum, no sacks. They only give up the one sack for the whole game. And if you look at some of the numbers, is that Kyler got hit twice, and that's it. He got hit twice.
And they did a great job, you know, using his legs in situations. Something that we've talked about, you know, and I know it gets talked to death, but the designed runs that they need to utilize him with, right? Like, it just seems like there's an opportunity there that they refuse to consistently use. And again, we'll never really know where it stems from, right? We'll never know if it stems from Kyler or if it stems from Petzing or what the issue is.
Or even if it's based on looks they're getting defensively. That right. Could be it as well.
Right, exactly. So, you know, you look at it and that's how, you know, you want to see more of that. But at the same time, you're seeing the maturation of a quarterback in terms of, and you talked about it before the show started, but like not feeling like he has to do everything. And you know, the reality is when you put up 278 yards and two touchdowns of total offense, you're still doing a lot of the heavy lifting, right?
Like, yes.
Like, you know, nearly 300 total yards of offense and two touchdowns is a lot of heavy lifting, but they feel, you know, he feels like he doesn't have to do it. And that's the big thing. And it's starting to be a belief in, you know, there's obviously bad that comes from every situation. I think we can agree that that was probably Marvin Harrison Jr.'s worst game as a pro.
Yeah. That's the one thing that I've noticed this year is that the expectations we've had of Harrison, he's making rookie mistakes right now. Like there's mental mistakes, there's concentration mistakes, and they've taken him, it's taken him a little bit out of sync. And while everyone's expecting to see, you know, a 1200 yard season, which is kind of what we all sort of thought would happen, it's easy to forget he is a rookie and is doing rookie things in terms of consistency and mental mistakes. But wasn't that fourth down throw that Kyler made to Harrison just wow?
But also, I mean, if you get a rookie that goes for 61,014, you're also not going to complain, right? Like, yeah, okay, you would rather have him at 80, you know, 1,214, but if the yards is where the yards and the receptions are what are lacking and not the touchdowns, you go, okay, that's something we can work with, right? Like it's better than the opposite where you're spamming him touches and not getting the results you want in terms of touchdowns. And so, yes, we would like to see more. I don't think there's any doubt about that, but where they're at isn't exactly a bad thing either.
Yeah. And in there's going to be games like that. I think we both want to see the game where we have a Marvin Harrison game. We've had the Marvin Harrison first quarter. We've had the touchdowns, but I think we're still waiting for that breakout game where it is dominant from start to finish. And like they're the team that they're facing just can't handle him. We haven't gotten there yet, but we've gotten consistency around like Trey McBride had a solid game. Michael Wilson, again, he was clutch down the stretch.
Pip Ryman was unbelievable.
Yeah. His one, oh yeah, and his first NFL catch for 5 yards.
And he runs over a linebacker. I mean, that was classic Tip Ryman. And the thing is with Tip wasn't his, obviously we know he's not a receiving tight end first, but like the way he was blocking is downright special. I mean, it's what makes him and what makes him special and why, you know, they took him in the third round and you saw it in this one. And that's, I don't think anybody's going to be upset with that, right?
Nope. Like if he is blocking tight end extraordinaire, guess what? That's what they like. That was the floor was so high for him that if you get anything beyond that, you're amazed. So that's fantastic. Yeah, I was worried, and I'm going to call this offense because it's for the kicking, like that blocked kick was going to, I mean.
That was awful, man.
Oh, when that happened, because, you know, that game, the Cardinals won, and they should have won by more, right? Because, you know, they even if they just missed the field goal, that's 7 points less off the board or whatever. But the fact that gets blocked. And every time we see a backup or replacement comes in, whether it's a backup punter, an injured punter, an injured long snapper, injured kicker, it bites the Cardinals in the rear, it seems like, every single time. Remember the Buffalo game when when Drew Butler was hurt, but they kept him active so he could be the holder. And then the snap is bad and Buffalo returns it for a touchdown. It seems like every single time or we do Rodrigo Blankenship missing kicks, Matt Amendola missing extra points. It seems like every time that they have to replace a specialist, something goes wrong.
Well, and Amendola was the one that missed the Eagles game, right? The year that Kyler slid too early.
Yes.
And then everybody blamed Kyler for sliding early. It's like, dude, the kicker missed a 39 yarder. Like, we're really going to be upset that the quarterback didn't get a first down, but he set up the team to kick a game winning field goal and the kicker missed it. Like, that happens sometimes. So it's interesting. Yeah, just the history, like you said, of how that works out or doesn't work out for this group. And we'll see how it goes, because this is one of those games that, you know, again, you don't want to overstate anything. You don't want to speak in hyperbole too much. But the reality is this could be a game that kind of puts them on the course of what we've been hoping to see under Jonathan Gannon, right? And gets them to the point where you go, okay, this is a team that's competitive. I mean, because think about this, you know, we've talked about it before, the when the Lions were 1-6, right? And everybody had kind of been like, well, that's, you know, that's the Lions. It's over. It's done with. And you look at what they did next, and they're 1-6 in 20. This is 2022, I believe. And then they beat the Packers 15-9. And it's like, okay, like that's an ugly win, something that we're talking about right now, right? But like, you beat the Packers 15-9. And then the next week you come out and you beat the Bears 31-30. And you go, oh, okay, now they're starting to figure it out. Because think about that before, like, they're 1-6 and their losses were 38-35, 28-24, 48-45, you know, like 31-27. Doesn't that sound like a team that we've talked about for the last, you know, however many games of the Jonathan Gannon era, of like, they're just a play away. They're just one play away consistently from becoming this team that we were expecting to see. And then it flipped on its head, and you got the 15-9, you got the 31-10, you got, you know, and then you got the 2017, you got those close games that kind of flipped the script on what this franchise or what that franchise was. And then it all kind of, now you see what they are, right? You see this Lions team, and they're this team that all of a sudden there's this wild statistic of the losses that come after playing them because of how physical the games are. And so, yeah, you just look at it from that perspective and you go, that could be the Cardinals. And yeah. could this game be that tipping point? And again, I know that's a lot to put on one game, but there are games that galvanize and put you in a situation to have success, and you wonder if this is the game. I mean,
we think it a lot, but here's the thing: the Cardinals' two wins are in the division. That's, you don't know how, like, that will come back if the Cardinals go on a little bit of a run. That is so critical. The Cardinals have traditionally, we know they won't lose an initial tiebreak to the Rams or the 49ers, even if they lose them again in weeks 17 and 18. It'll come down to division record, and the Cardinals have the best division record in the division right now. And that is a way that they're flipping the script, because they beat some other teams, and then last year they were terrible against the division teams. So now they've got two division wins, and I know we'll talk more about this in our show later in the week when we preview the Packers, but, you know, that win, if they can then carry that, keep that same energy against Green Bay and Los Angeles and Miami, guess what? We're looking at it. We're looking, but we're feeling good about that team again. As it is right now, we don't like. Everyone was jumping ship after Washington. They're like, oh crap, the rebuild is over. Now they beat the San Francisco 49ers, and now we're like, okay, 2-3. This is what we. This is better than we thought.
And Jess, what's wild? What's the wildest thing is there is a scenario where they're the number one team in the NFC West coming out of this weekend. Now, it takes the 49ers beating the Seahawks, which is plausible, on Thursday night football. So we're recording on Tuesday, so literally 2 days from now. But then if the 49ers take care of their end of things,
and the Cardinals beat the Packers,
they're literally the number one team in the NFC because, as you said, they're 2-0 in the division. And let's just be honest about that, Jess. Like, 2-3 is not – it's basically where we saw this team, right?
Like, even a little – most would have said 1-4. Most would have said 1-4. Look at that schedule. The only win that they probably – we had them 2-3. We did. We had them 2-3. But yeah, pretty much anyone outside, anyone looking at the Cardinals, looking at the schedule, thought they beat the Commanders. That's it.
Right. And so to be 2-3 after that five games is exactly where they're supposed to be. It's just not how we expected it. We didn't expect them to be 0-3 outside of the division and 2-0 in the division and playing potentially on Sunday to be the top team. And like, it's just not something we saw at all. And so now you wonder in general, like, what does this team look like? What are they going to do from here? And I guess the easiest way to state it is we have no idea.
Nope.
None whatsoever.
You're because this team is, it's a complete mystery.
And I don't think you and I would be upset at any juncture if they still finished this season 6-6, right? Like, because then they're 8-9 or, you know, even 7-5, obviously better, but, you know, 9-8, 8-9 wins, just like we expected from the jump. And they're competitive and they have some, you know, frustrating losses, but they have some wins that give you that, oh, this team's not bad. And I think that's where we're at, right? That's where we're at right now, is we're just kind of waiting to see if that is how this plays out. Because the truth of the matter is, the reality of the situation is that while they have been fine, this was the first win that we saw come from adversity.
Right. The adversity didn't break them. They overcame it. And then that's not a lot. They overcame a blocked field goal for a touchdown and interception on consecutive. They were 13 points down at halftime, and they came back and won that game. That's great.
Well, not just that, Jess. And yes, the obviously down 13, came back and won the second half 14-0. But it's that zero.
Yes.
It's
the second time they've done that. That's the second time that they held Washington. They held Detroit scoreless in the second half.
Yep.
They held San Francisco scoreless in the second half. And this is a bad defense. I don't understand it. How does a bad defense do that?
Against this team. Yeah. Like, right. It's wild. So you look at it, and I think you're just at the point now where we truly just don't know who this team is or what this team is. But at the same time, you go, I'm okay with that because I like what I see. Like, I'm okay with the unknown of it because at least they're giving us something. Whereas coming out of that Commanders game, it was genuinely like, this is miserable. Like, they're not good. They looked awful at all phases of the game. And let's be honest, Jess, like, after the Kyler interception, and I know this happened before the Kyler interception, you were going into halftime going, they don't have one side of the football that's good at anything. Right? Like, because
totally true.
Because you came out like that game goes, oh crap. They just, I mean, we thought they were at least still good on specials. And then they got a field goal block return for, and that feels like it's going to be the difference in the game at that point. Like, I know other things took place after that, but like, you're like, 20 to 10 now. There's no way that this team's going to overcome that. And then Kyler throws a pick on a really badly designed play. And still, the pick was 100% on Kyler, but it was just such a poorly designed play. And you're just like, oh, there's just no way. And then, yeah, I mean, they overcome it. It was wild to see. It was crazy to watch happen. And the fact that the Cardinals offense and defense was better than the Niners somehow.
That's crazy.
Coming into this, will we have, I mean, think about this, Jess. Brock Purdy was 19 of 35 with one touchdown, two interceptions. The Cardinals got two sacks. They forced three turnovers.
Let's talk about that next. Coming on next episode of the FC Rip Podcast, best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's move on to the defensive side of the ball. Break that down because it was good. That's coming on next on Rise FC Red. We're back on the Rise FC Rip Podcast, best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Yes, you were just talking about Brock Purdy. But it was weird to see Brock because Brock Purdy both picked them apart and then was also careless with the football, right? It was a really weird game to see because there were times when it looked like, as we've seen Brock Purdy completely pick apart the Cardinals defense. They had no answer for George Kittle. They had no answer for Brandon Ayuk. But after that, Juwan Jennings got hurt, only had one catch. Deebo Samuel had one catch. Jordan Mason had one catch. But the fact that they were to pick off Brock twice, they sacked him twice, they hit him several times, they forced the Jordan Mason fumble. This was not a very Brock Purdy game.
Well, and I think the thing that we're learning right now, Jess, more than anything, is that as difficult and complex as football is in general, there's a simplicity to the whole thing. And you and I lamented this last week, and I thought, I mean, obviously there was a plethora of plays that were the downfall of the Commanders' loss. But I thought the biggest one, and I don't know if you agree, but we talked about it quite a bit, was the Sean Murphy bunting, inexcusable PI in a situation where it didn't need to be a PI because they had cut it to a two-score game. They get off the field on that play, and they have who knows what happens. But instead, then they get, you know, first and goal from it, and then they go up by three scores again. And it's like it's one of those situations where it's like that's just an inexcusable time for that type of mistake. You look at this game, Jess, they had one penalty for 5 yards. One.
That was fantastic. And by the way, Murphy bunting wasn't very good.
No, but
they avoided the stupid stuff.
Right. If you're not giving them free yards, it changed. Because think about this. Like, it's like you said, it felt like Purdy was able to do whatever he wants, but the yardage difference was 384 to 358. I mean, a 26-yard difference in that game is negligible, especially when you're talking about four penalties to one, the 49ers having four, obviously the Cardinals having one, three turnovers to one. Like, all of that puts into perspective that everything was basically even in this game. The Cardinals made less mistakes. They were more disciplined. Like, Jess, when was the last time we talked about that with the Arizona Cardinals? They were more disciplined and made less mistakes than their opponents in a close game.
That's crazy.
Like, that's crazy. And it's exactly like, yeah, the defense, not great, but better than the 49ers defense. And when was the last time we would have said that with a straight face?
Well, and what's crazy about this as well, if you think about it, is that they were playing a little shorthanded. because they didn't have Garrett Williams. And so we saw them go a little bit differently with the defensive backfield. And there was there seemed to be a strategy as well with the personnel that they had up defensively, because Jesse Laketa was active for the first time this season. So they kept Xavier Thomas, the rookie, who was great in the preseason. They kept him inactive. You know, they wanted discipline. They wanted consistency. And Laketa was fine with being out there. And he told Mac Wilson, he's like, I'm going to set the edge. I'm going to set the edge. You clean up. And he was content with being very disciplined in the game. And that meant they used Jalen Thompson in the slot. Interesting. I wish this game were at home, because when I watch on TV, it's nearly impossible for me to be able to tell how they do their defensive rotations. But Star Thomas and Max Melton played almost identical snaps. And I know that Melton's been getting worked in more and more. So Sean Murphy Bunting played 63 of the 64 snaps. Star Thomas played 33. Max Milton played 32, and then Keytrell Clark played 21. I don't know. I because we're watching on TV, it's hard to tell how they were deploying their defense. I think they might have. I think the personnel might have made it a little different than what San Francisco might have been expecting. And I think that Jalen Thompson playing in the slot was interesting to see. Even though we saw him playing the slot for the first half of last year, he was not our best option at it. But I think he brings a little bit after we saw a little more from Rabbit, played 22 snaps, and he played well. And then they had all their defensive linemen active. And so they purposely went bigger. And I think that kind of made a difference. But
I'm trying to find something and I cannot find it, but it basically was that the Cardinals, and I don't ever want to say it in this way, because the reality of the situation is Kyle Shanahan is a wonderful coach, and he has basically owned the Arizona Cardinals during his tenure. So I want that to first be completely understood. That being said, it's interesting that, and I cannot find it, and if I find it during the show, I'll make sure I talk about it, but that there's a statement that they basically, if you put five or six on the line against the Niners, that they check out of runs and throw the ball. And so you wonder if Jonathan Gannon knew that, and that's why.
Because they came out and threw the ball way more in the first half than we expected out there. Jordan Mason still came out and averaged over 6 yards a carry, 14 carries, 89 yards. So he was still great, but it wasn't a dominant rushing performance, which is what has been their bread and butter.
Right. And you can't say that you can't be like, well, you know, it's Jordan Mason. Have you watched what they've done with Jordan Mason this season? I mean, he's literally averaging over 100 yards per game, 107 to be exact. 147, obviously, in game one, 177 in the loss to the Rams, 123 in their win over the Patriots, but only 89 against the Cardinals. And it's wild that this team somehow can be, and bullied is not the right term. Now, they were bullied on defense, but that they can basically be bullied in the sense of like, oh, there's five guys at the line, six guys at the line, check to a pass. And because it just seems like, on the flip side, you were doing that against the Cardinals, and the Cardinals were like, doesn't matter, we're still running the ball right down your throat, right? Like, that was the wild thing in that scenario. And it's very rare that we've seen Kyle Shanahan be out-schemed, especially by the Cardinals. Like, that's just not something that you see very often. And the irony of the whole situation is this was probably Jordan Mason's most efficient day rushing the football because he was averaging over 6 yards per carry. So, like, this guy was just beating the tar out of the Cardinals on the ground, but they would get a look and just be like, oh, we can't run the ball. And that's a very odd thing for a Niners team, especially with Kyle Shanahan at the helm, because if anything, it seems like at times you'll be like, hey, why don't you throw the ball with how many people are in the box? And so to see the Cardinals defense be able to come out and put the basically Brock Purdy as like, hey, Brock, go and beat us. And again, he was not bad. It's not like he was terrible by any means. But he definitely made some mistakes that we haven't seen him make very often. And he made some throws that can only be looked at as poor decisions. And then obviously the second interception was just a situation where, you know, Jalen Thompson timed up that blitz incredibly. Nick Rallis or Jonathan Gannon, whoever made the call, did a wonderful job in that situation, seeing it and going with it. Because let's be honest, Jalen Thompson had struggled most of that day, if not most of that season, this season so far. So for him to come out and make a big play in that situation, it was important as well. So, yeah, I just, Jess, I don't know if we've ever been able to say, like, the Cardinals defense out schemed and then outplayed the 49ers off. Like, that's just wildly unheard of for what we've seen over, especially the last 4 or 5 years, where we're talking about the Niners being perennial Super Bowl contenders while the Cardinals are just, you know, trying to figure it out. It seems like for that to be the outcome of this game and kind of how this game was determined more than anything is not what you and I expected.
Yeah, it was good to see, you know, what you were saying about how the check into that, like, that's a very, you know, Shanahan's not like stubborn. He's like, oh, if they stuff the box, we'll pass. If that I'm like, honestly, that's what led to the Seahawks in that Super Bowl getting picked off by the Patriots loaded the box. Like, numbers say check out of the run.
Right.
That's what the numbers say. And I bet the Cardinals are kind of like that as well, in a lot of ways, because I was seeing one of the things is that James Conner ran over 50% of the time and was one of the higher ones without a stacked box. And I think the Cardinals balance that really well.
But you have to remember, they're also the ones that use 13 personnel more than anybody. So the numbers aren't always the same because they're playing typically with 9 in the box. And so other teams will keep a DB or the 3 DBs out wide. They won't bring them into the box, so to speak, because of that dynamic threat that Trey McBride and Elijah Higgins offer as receivers, right? They're like, okay, we can't just load the box because that is when the play action kills us. So we can't overload it. So while you're accurate in what you're saying, it's a different way of going about it because the Cardinals are facing 8-man boxes, but they've technically got 9 in the box to run against it because, you know, they've got 3 tight ends in there. And Tip Riman, I mean, he's basically become a glorified right tackle and does a hell of a job with it. And so, yeah, the way the Cardinals kind of, even from, that's what's wild to me, Jess, is that even from behind, they were kind of dictating things, right? Like that's one thing you don't see from Shanahan very often is, and I think he got a little spooked after the fumble and he, you know, he was like, oh, we're just going to run, you know, oh, we're just going to take what they're giving us. And that's the pass game. Cause it's, let's be honest, it was working really well. I mean, Brandon Ayuk had what, 900 yards receiving in that game. Like it felt like it, but
147. It was, he definitely was back to Ayuk. And it's like, oh, so this is the game he gets on track. Fantastic.
Right. And when that was happening, weren't we all just kind of like,
oh,
yeah. Like, really?
So much for a close game.
Right. You couldn't wait one. I mean, Jordan Mason's running for 6 yards a carry and Brandon Ayuk's putting up 100 yards almost at halftime. Like, and George Kittle's getting in on the action. Like, come on. Yeah. So it was interesting the way it all played out because, you know, like you said, the two probably best offenses. I mean, Josh Allen's definitely the best player, but probably the two best offenses, the Lions and the Niners, they've shut out in the second half in both of those games. I mean, and to allow 43 points to those two teams. Now, granted, 43 points in the first half, but, you know, 43 points.
If they could just kind of tone that down.
Right.
To, you know, 10, 12 points a half and play from ahead, it would be so much better.
But
so much better.
But yeah, like we've talked about it all year. Like this defense doesn't have to be great by any stretch of the imagination. It just can't be piss poor.
Yeah.
And I think this game was exactly kind of the example of what we were talking about. Like, the defense wasn't great, but it was good enough, and it was very, very opportunistic in the plays it did make, and that created these opportunities, and that's what this, you know, this team desperately needed to get this win.
And with that, let's wrap up this edition of the show. We'll be back later this week. We'll have, I imagine I'll have another show for the Packers preview, but that'll wrap up this edition of the show. Seth and I'll be back in a couple of days. That'll wrap up episode 600 of the Rise Up Seared podcast, Spencer Cardinals Talk on the Web. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. We enjoyed a win. Hopefully we can get another one at the end of this week. Thanks for listening as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Seared podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up, Sea Red.